needs should be more. Now, if I should explain an important item here. Why does the Pasuk combine the mourning of Ahav, the king of the Jews, and Yeshiyahu, the king of Judah, the son of King David, as a mourning that's equal to the passing of Mashiach, the future king, Mashiach, coming from the tribe of Yosef, future commanding general of the Jewish armies when Mashiach comes? What is the connection between the two? The answer is that, for example, you have a person, an old man, whose eyes are very weak. And this old man struggles hard and long until he finds a place where he can get special lenses to correct his eyesight. So he's blessed. He can read. He can see. He has eyesight. One day, suddenly, these glasses are lost. They came from a distant country. They were very hard to get. Just about impossible to replace. He cries over the loss of these lenses. What does he cry about? The fact that the lenses cost $10? It's not that $10 he bemoans. He cries over what the lenses gave him, power of sight. So you get a person who is wealthy, and he has a very expensive diamond. One day he loses a diamond. What does he cry about? Not what the diamond could do for him, but the actual value of the diamond. This is not like lenses which are worth nothing and serve. The diamond itself, he cries, he goes over their actual value. You get a third case, a man whose eyesight is very poor, but this man is extremely wealthy. And he strives until he gets himself a pair of lenses from overseas. But these glasses are made up in a very expensive manner. The frames are made with diamonds. And when he loses this, he cries over both. He has lost both a big treasure of diamonds, plus the power of sight which these lenses gave to him. Now the case of Ahab and Yeshiyahu, these two kings. One, Ahab himself was no bargain. He was one of spread idol worship and did a lot of harm to the Jews. But one thing he did good for the Jews was he gave the Jews respect to the eyes of the Goyim. Ahab was one of the kings who had conquered most of the world. So as a power, the Jews' respect, the prestige was very high. When he died, they cried not over what Ahab himself was worth, but what he had brought to them, this prestige and power. Yoshiyahu, king of Judah, was very weak. He did nothing for the Jews as far as helping them as a power of the world. But he was a big tzaddik. He spread Torah to them. When he passed away, they cried not for what he had given to them as far as power is concerned, but for his own value, the value of himself as a tzaddik. The combination of both is what Mashiach ben Yosef will have. Because Mashiach ben Yosef will be that power, that leader of the Jews, who will elevate the Jews up to a high position in the world, to overpower, to conquer all their enemies. So bringing this Kavod to the Jews is what they will moan at the passing of Mashiach Yosef, plus the fact that he himself is so great a tzaddik, the son of Yosef a tzaddik, and here they will cry and bemoan the double loss that they will suffer. Therefore the Pasuk says that the loss Mashiach ben Yosef will be a hesped, a mourning period, like that of Ahav and Yoshiyahu combined. This is the way they consoled Rabbi Yishmael, their rabbi, and with this they fulfilled the mitzvah of Menachem Abel. Above all, they pointed out that a tzaddik is one whom we mourn as our loss, not as his loss. The tzaddik is so great that when he passes away, he becomes even still greater. And from where he is, he continues to help, to guide students, and Jews in general. It is the zechut of a tzaddik who protects and helps the Jews during his lifetime and forever afterwards. We are zochet to have the Emunah Shleimah, the Emesut Kav Yagin Aleinu. We are zochet to reap the fruits of this by seeing Nesla Atid with the coming of Mashiach.
We continue in Shri Ur in Gemara. Gemara says there are two expressions, two terms that are said to a person when he leaves. Lech, go, v'shalom, to peace, and lech b'shalom, go in peace. These two are distinctly different expressions and are said at different times. When a person says to someone who is alive, go in peace, he must say, lech l'shalom. The person bids farewell to one who has passed away, he says, lech b'shalom. Bid to a person who has passed away, l'shalom to a person who is alive. And even as we find that Yitro said to Moshe Rabbeinu, lech l'shalom, and as a result, Moshe Rabbeinu left, he was successful, became king of the Jews. When David HaMelech said to his son Avshalom, lech b'shalom, he left him, and he was hung eventually. The reason is that we say lech l'shalom, to peace, means to continue advancing. You are not yet complete. You are alive, you must continue advancing upwards. We say this to a person who's alive. Bishalom means in peace, you have completed your duty in life. That's the end. This is the end of the line. So when bidding farewell to a person being buried, you say to him, lech bishalom. If the opposite is said, chas bishalom, it's a bad sign. To say to a person who is alive, lech bishalom, it means you're bidding him farewell forever. Chas v'shalom. Therefore, this is the correct way to bid farewell to a person is lech l'shalom. The Yehuda says that in the yeshiva of Rebbe, Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Abida Nasi, there were two young students, both were dumb. They could not speak. They lacked the power of speech. There was no way of testing them to see whether these students paid attention, whether they absorbed the lessons in the yeshiva or not. These two were the grandchildren of Rabbi Yochanan. Grandchildren, the Gemara says, or nephews. Now, Rebbe noticed, though, as they were sitting there, each time they would nod their heads, they'd move their lips. But he still could not tell whether they had succeeded in learning and absorbing the lessons. One day, because of the zechut of Rabbi Yochanan, Rebbe decided to pray for them that they should be cured. He did. They were cured immediately. And then they revealed the fact that all this time they had paid such close attention that they were pure, clear in the knowledge of all the Gemara, the entire Shas, everything they had heard. So that you never can tell about a person who's silent. The Gemara says, in general, a wise person is he who remains silent. It's the foolish person who makes a lot of noise. The Gemara says, for example, you take a can that has one single coin in it, and rattle it, it'll make a lot of noise. One drop of brains. A can that's filled to the top with coins, shake it, and you'll get no noise out of it at all. So shtika, silence, is good for the wise. How much better, more beneficial it is for those who are not, to hide the fact they are ignorant. The Gemara says about the pasuk in the Torah, when the brothers of Yosef decided to kill Yosef HaTzadik, the Torah tells us that Reuven attempted to save his life, and it was decided that he be thrown into a pit. He told them, instead of killing him, just throw him into a pit and let him on his own. With the plan, of course, he had to leave there to go home. He planned to come back and to draw him out of that pit, save him. In the interim, after he had left, they took him out of the pit and they sold him as a slave to Egypt. Meanwhile, the Torah says that this pit, the Pasuk says, the pit was empty. There was no water in it. So the Gemara says, it's a strange statement. The pit was empty. Habor Rek. Rek means empty. In Bomayim, there was no water. Why does the Torah add these words that are superfluous, unnecessary? If it's empty, of course there's no water in it. Why does the Torah tell us there's no water? The Gemara answers to teach us that the pit was empty of water, but there were poisonous snakes and scorpions in this pit. Now the question arises, of course, how did Reuven expect to save Yosef and Tzadik's life if he told them throw him into this pit? What kind of saving in life is that? Throw him into a pit with poisonous snakes. Where is his kindness? The answer is that Reuven knew that even the Satan, even the angel of death, cannot do a person as much harm as another person could. Nobody can harm a person as a second person, because a person who has free choice cannot be stopped. One who has free choice and wants to commit evil, he could commit murder even when the angel of death will abstain. If he would like to save this person's life, his time is not up, the angel of death cannot stop this murder from being committed. So murder is done without the knowledge or consent of the angel of death. This is one that cannot be stopped. Even the zechut of a person, the good angels, cannot save him generally from a human being who, in the sense of bechira, free choice, is greater than angels. So therefore, Reuven figured he must save Yosef HaTzadik from his brothers, humans who have this free choice. Let him better be thrown into a pit of poisonous snakes, and then he was certain that the zechut of Yosef HaTzadik would be sufficient to save his life from these poisonous snakes. It would not be sufficient to save his life from his own brothers. This was the kavanah of Reuven and having him thrown into this pit. This is what the Zohar HaKadosh explains. Secondly, of course, the Mefarshim say it's possible that Reuven simply was not aware of the fact that they were poisonous snakes in that pit. It's very dark at the bottom. He didn't know. He thought he was throwing him into an empty pit. The general phrase is used very often to describe a real first-class Am Haaretz. We use this pasuk in describing an Am Haaretz because the Gemara says that there is such thing as an Am Haaretz, an illiterate, and there's something worse, lower degree than Am Haaretz, and it's called a boor. A boor, we have that word even in English. A boor is a thick-headed person, stubborn, without any sense. The Torah is always likened to water. We say that just as fish live in the water, that's how the Jews live in the waters of Torah, the sea of the Talmud. So here we say, Habor Reik, the pit or the boor was empty. Empty of what? Imbomayim. He had no waters of Torah in him. Who is a boor? One who is completely devoid, empty of any knowledge of Torah. That is a boor. Barbinan. The Gemara tells us a case one time, Rabbi Yochanan ben Baruka and Rabbi Elazar Chisma, two students came to visit their rabbi, Rabbi Yehoshua, in the city of Pekin. And he asked them, you just came from the yeshiva. The yeshiva of the chief rabbis. What did you learn there that was new today? You must have heard a chidush, something new. What did you learn there? They replied, Rabbi, we are your students. We drink from your waters. We can't tell you anything new. You're the one we came to learn from you. This was a very deeply respectful term used to show that all we can do is learn from you and not tell you anything. Then Yehoshua replied, despite that, it's impossible to go to a class and not to hear something new. Therefore, tell me, what did you hear that's new? They said, well, chief rabbi there today was Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and he mentioned a chidush about a certain pasuk. Pasuk in the Chumash says, there's a mitzvah to gather the people, the men, the women, and the children in the knis, the Bet Midrash. So he said, if men come, we can understand they come to learn Torah. We understand why they are gathered. Women come, they come just to listen. They can pick up knowledge of mitzvot. That we can see. Why children? Why small children? What's the sense of bringing small children? He said the answer is to give reward to those who bring them. Children might not gain much, but it's a mitzvah for those who bring small children to a Bet Midrash, because the small children in their youth, their infancy, will learn respect for the Kedusha, the holiness of the Bet Midrash and the holiness of Torah. When they grow older, this will be part of their natural makeup. Rabbi Yeshua said, you have a treasure, precious pearl, and I nearly lost it. You nearly deprived me of it by not telling me. And they said, well, there's another thing that Elazar ben Azariah said. Pasuk says, Hashem said to the Jews, Et Hashem ha'amarta hayom, v'Hashem ha'amircha hayom. The Jews accept Hashem, and Hashem accepts the Jews. Hashem said to the Jews, you made me one singular, individual, unique item in the world. I accept you also as a unique individual item. You say to me, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. You say about Hashem, Hashem Echad. Hashem is one and one only. Therefore, I say about the Jews, Miki Amcha Yisrael, Goy Echad Be'aretz. Jews are one single nation on earth. Also, at this same sitting, mention was made of the fact that in learning Gemara, especially that portion of Torah, we learn about the discussions of the rabbis, machloket, debate of rabbis. In a debate, we have two groups of rabbis arguing a point. One says this item is permissible, the other says it is forbidden. One says this item is kasher, the other says it is taref. One says this item is tahor, pure, the other says tameh. So, the question is, how can we learn Torah? If we have rabbis of the same level arguing it's permissible or it's forbidden, where does that leave us? Well, how can we study Torah and obey Torah if we are left in the blind, the dark? The answer is that all this is given to us through one leader, one shepherd. The words of all these rabbis was taught to us by one shepherd, one leader, Moshe Rabbeinu, given to him by Hashem, Hashem, creator of all, and author of the Torah. Every word of the Torah, both the words of those who say forbidden and those who say permissible, are the words of Hashem. It is up to you to study these words carefully and to learn, according to the rules of Torah, which one you should follow. But both are definitely the words of Hashem given to us through Moshe Rabbeinu. So when we see rabbis in the Gemara arguing, it is not these rabbis speaking personally about their own personal thoughts and opinions. They are stating the word of Hashem. We have our guidelines in the Torah as to which one we should follow in action. But in theory, both are correct, both are the word of Hashem. The Gemara asks, why did these students, when they came to Rabbi Yeshua, why did they at first refuse to tell him what they had heard? These are very powerful chidushim. Why, when they were asked, what did you learn, they said nothing. We are your students, and we can't learn from you. Aside from the matter of Anachedah's respect, they must have had a different reason. And the Gemara says they did it out of fear, because of something that happened prior to that. A short time before that, there was a case of Rabbi Yossi, who came to visit his rabbi, Rabbi Elazar, the city of Lud. Rabbi Elazar asked Rabbi Yossi, "What did you learn new in the Bet Midrash today?" And he said, "We learned that the section north of Israel, known as Ammon or Moab, there, the seventh year is not like the seventh year in Israel, the year of Shemitah. The fields remain as belonging to the owners, and the owners have to give a ma'aser, tenth, to the poor." Rabbi Elazar said to Rabbi Yossi, "Then, open your hands. Open the palms of your hands, and bend your head down, and let your eyes fall into your hands." He did this, and his eyes fell out. Rabbi Elazar said, "This is your penalty for telling me something directly without having the respect of asking me first, is this a chidush, is it something new, or do I know about it myself? How do you come as a student to teach me something?" And then Rabbi Elazar said, "I'll show you that this originates from way back. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said that he had received from his rabbi, and his rabbi from his rabbi before him, and so on." Moshe Rabbeinu stated this, that this section, Ammon and Moab, is required to give Maaser Ani in the year of Shemitah. Then Rabbi Elazar's anger became pacified, and he said, "I pray that Rabbi Yossi's eyes should return to their place," and they returned. This was the reason why these two students now were afraid to tell their rabbi, Rabbi Yeshua, of any chidush they had learned. They treasured their eyes. They were afraid they might not get them back. So they said, "We are your students," until he insisted that they tell him what they had learned, and they agreed. Why just the eyes? Why were they punished with the eyes? The answer is that the Gemara says, when you come to learn Torah from a rabbi, you do not learn it with your ears. It's not just hearing, you have to see, listen to, and watch, look at. Always your eyes should see a rabbi, then, because the eyes are the neshama, the mirror of the soul, they'll absorb the words of Torah. Because the eyes are the ones that are supposed to show, make contact with the rabbi, therefore, they are the symbol of fear and respect, and that's why they were punished with their eyes. But of course, Rabbi Elazar, in his kindness, then prayed for them, and they were cured. The Gemara says that Rabbi Elazar was studying the Navi. He came to a pasuk, and he burst out crying. The Gemara says, what pasuk did he come to? Sentence says that Shaul HaMelech, King Shaul, before the last battle, the Philistines was very apprehensive, very fearful. He wanted to know how the battle would turn out, and he had to have contact with heaven. The prophet Shmuel had already passed away. So he went to a magician and asked that the spirit of Shmuel be brought back from heaven, make contact with the spirit. This was done, and the magician said that the spirit of Shmuel is present. King Shaul could not see the spirit of Shmuel, only the magician could. The magician was shocked, and he said, "You asked me to bring a spirit. I see two of them." And then Shmuel, the prophet, said to King Shaul, "Why did you torture me in bringing me here?" The Gemara says what was meant by this torture. Of course, the rest of the story is in the Navi, where he told that King Shaul would die in this battle, but he'd go right to get in. Yemenah analyzes this pasuk. What's meant by torturing me? Yemenah says that Shmuel the prophet was summoned. He didn't know what he was summoned for. The spirit should come forth. And his first thought was, he's being summoned to a trial in heaven. This was not the eventual trial that all souls must appear at. As the Yemenah says, that even those souls who complete their penalty in Gehinnom, and they are now pure, they go to Gan Eden, they stay there for years. After Mashiach comes, After Tchiyat HaMetim, then come back to life, there'll be an Olam Haba, future, Atid Lavol, a future world, which will be higher and better than the present Gan Eden. And before these souls will be Zocher to that life, they must all go to a new trial. Even those who are already in Gan Eden will be brought out to face stand trial there to see if they merit and deserve to be at that future life. So this was not what Shmuel the prophet was afraid of, because he knew that this was only less than a year since he had passed away. He knew that Mashiach had not come yet. Mashiach would not come that soon. It was not Tchiyat HaMetim because he wasn't alive yet on earth. What was he afraid of? He was afraid that in the year after a person's passing, a person has to stand one trial or more, number of trials. So he was afraid of the second trial. He was already in Gan Eden. He was afraid of a second trial in that first year. What Rabbi Elazar cried about. Shmuel was so afraid, Shmuel HaNavi, that he brought with him Moshe Rabbeinu, thinking that he might have to stand trial. So he brought Moshe Rabbeinu to testify that whatever you have in the Torah you gave us, testify that I have obeyed every mitzvah. Rabbi Elazar cried when he came to this, and he said, if Shmuel HaNavi, so great a tzaddik, so pure, he was afraid of this trial, what should little people like us say? How fearful should we be? But imagine if Rabbi Elazar, one of the greatest rabbis in the Gemara, cried over this and said, what should we do, small people? Today, what are we in comparison? Today we are how many degrees below, endless degrees below Rabbi Elazar. How much should we be afraid of those eventual trials which every person must stand at, face these trials in heaven? This is the tears of Rabbi Elazar. We should take those to heart. And of course, the advice is prepare for it. Each person should prepare himself for these trials. Preparation is only in this world. There it's too late. Only here can a person prepare for those trials with mitzvot, with the accumulation of many mitzvot that would help him, and with teshuvah, that would erase the sins that he might have done. The Gemara says that Rav Yosef was studying Navi. He came to a pasuk and he burst out crying. The pasuk says, "Yesh nisper b'lo mishpat." It is possible for a person to be destroyed, to be wiped out, meaning to be killed, without judgment, in a manner that's not justified at all. Without deserving death, the person should be killed before his time. He cried and said, is such a thing possible? Can a person die before his time without reason? The Gemara says, yes, we have a case to show. A case of the son of Abaye, Rav Bibi Bar Abaye, who was very friendly with the angel of death. Very friendly with him. The angel of death confided in him and told him stories about the past, his experiences. The angel of death has a very rich repertoire, rich stories about all the people he had killed. So he told him a story, one special case that he had experienced. One day, some years back before that, time came in heaven. Angel of death was told that he should take the life of Miriam, the hairdresser. Miriam, the hairdresser, was the mother of Yeshu, Yimach Shemo. Hebrew name was Miriam, she was Jewish. English name is resembled that, we won't mention it. Miriam, the hairdresser, she was a hairdresser, she was the wife of Papus Ben Yehuda, and of course she was naturally very evil herself, having committed adultery, besides many other crimes, besides having given birth to a mamzer, and so on. But being that evil, she was evil throughout her whole life. Finally, the time came for her to be taken. Now, it's important to note that the angel of death is an angel of death. He is a Satan. He is the angel of evil. but he still has feelings. But he has feelings in a sense where, as the Zohar HaKadosh says, after all, he's an angel. He's, the word malach means angel, it means messenger. He's a messenger of Hashem. Hashem tells this angel, go perform this mission. Go kill. He's got to do it. He's got to fulfill it. But in his actions, go kill or go induce a person to commit sin. Is he committing a crime? The Zohar HaKadosh says he isn't. Because he's fulfilling the command of Hashem for one thing. Secondly, he's trying to make a Jew commit a sin with the thought that if the Jew refuses to listen to him, he's elevating this Jew to a high position. This Jew gets credit for overcoming his evil desire. So the act of this angel of death, the act of this Satan, the act of this Yetzer Hara, is an act of an angel who might even be classified as a good angel. It's only through this Yetzer Hara that a Jew can rise to be deserving of Gan Eden. So therefore, this angel of death, the Zohar HaKadosh says, this Yetzer Hara, this Satan, has a good point about it. In a sense, he is good. He is an angel of Hashem, and his kevana, at times, is to do good. To try to get a Jew to commit a sin, not because he wants the Jew to go against Hashem's command. He would like to have the Jew refuse, and thereby have the Jew be elevated. The exact mashal, the example the Zohar HaKadosh gives, is that of a king who has a son, a prince. He wants to test this prince and see if the prince is worthy of taking over the kingdom. He wants to know if the prince is morally clean, morally pure. The king calls upon a zonah, a woman of ill repute, of extraordinary beauty. He says to this zonah, I want you to tempt my son. Tempt him with everything possible. Use every power of your persuasion. Get him to commit the worst type of sin. Does the king want his son to commit this sin? Of course not. The king is anxious to know, is his son worthy of taking over the crown, or isn't he? If the son fails, if this zonah persuades the son to live with her, then the son is not deserving, not worthy. But if she uses all her wiles, all her tricks, and cannot persuade him, what happens to this son, this prince? He's elevated to the position of king. Who is the one that brought this son to the position of king? The sunnah and her attempts. This is the act of the Satan, the Yetzer Hara. He is an evil angel, but through him only is a Jew proven to be worthy of the high position of purity that goes to get in. Now, I return to this case. The Melech HaMavet was speaking to the Bibi Bar Abai, and he said, the order was given in heaven, bring in Miriam, the hairdresser, this evil woman who committed adultery, gave birth to Yeshu, who lived a life of evil throughout. Our time has come. Melech HaMavet said, I don't want to come near that evil piece. I can't stand being close to it. What could he do? He called upon one of his assistants, a different malach, an angel. He is the commander of all the angels of evil. And he said to him, go bring Miriam the hairdresser. Now, not all angels are equally intelligent. Some of them are not that clever. They can make mistakes too. This angel he sent was a junior apprentice. He wasn't used to this job. He didn't get the message right. He went down to earth, and he took the life of Miriam, the teacher, a neighbor of this Miriam. He took the wrong person. When he came back with the wrong person, he said, what do we do now? So, can we bring this Miriam back to life? Return her? So they said, no. As long as she is here already, let her remain. We've got to go back and take the other video. So now, the question is, what do we do about the pitiful case of this Miriam, the teacher? That's the way it always is. Teachers always suffer. What happens to her? She died before her time. And secondly, how could she die before her time? Her time is not up. How can this angel of death take her? The answer is that when one is in a dangerous spot, then they are placed in a position of bad or harsh luck, their mazal fails, and they could be cause of it. This angel waited for her while she was cleaning the oven, the hot oven, with a poker, and she placed this poker on her feet, burned herself. Because she had started to suffer, he was able to finish the job for her and take her life. So now Bibi asked the angel of death, despite this, do you have permission to take a person's life before the time? The angel of death answered, well, that's this pasuk. The pasuk says, yesh nisper b'lo mishpat. A person can die, his life can be taken without judgment, without it being justified. We rely on this pasuk. So he said, well, isn't it a rule, though, that a person has a certain number of years and they're not supposed to go to the heavenly trial before the time is up? So he said, right. Until that time, the number of years that this Miriam, the teacher, was supposed to live, she was kept in suspension. She is not given over to the heavenly trial. She's suspended in heaven and until the time is up. So the question then arose, but these are years of life that were taken from her. If she's not going to use these years of life, what happens to those years? The angel of death answered, those years that we took from her, we had in our possession. We couldn't keep them. We had to give them to someone. So, being kind, we looked for a Talmid Chacham, a wise Chacham, a rabbi, a tzaddik, and specifically one who does not have a temper, one who, when he is insulted, he will overlook it for forgiving. One who is that kind, we give him these years extra as a bonus, a gift added to his life. He keeps those years and he lives longer. Now, in the first place, the Beinazal says that, explain this, the Beinazal says that this angel of death is not exactly a close friend of a Talmid Chacham or a Tzaddik. There is still a friction between this evil Satan and Tzaddikim. Why would he want to give a Tzaddik a gift of so many more years of life? It doesn't make sense. Beinazal answers this. This is one of the few cases where Beinazal comments on Gemara. Beinazal answers that the Gemara tells us that a person lives a battle all his life combating the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination. He's got to fight this battle. He is tempted, but he refuses temptation. The Yetzer Hara comes back again to attack him, a second time, a third time, a fourth time. If he holds out until the majority of his years have passed and he has remained solid without succumbing, giving it a temptation, then he is assured the rest of his life will not be attacked anymore. So if he goes through the majority of his life winning out these battles, he is safe for the rest of his life. The Yetzer Hara, the Satan, is no friend of a tzaddik. The contrary, his enemy. So he says, this person, for example, knowing that he's supposed to live 70 years, and for 36 years, more than half of his life, he has withstood the attack of the Yetzer Hara, he's now safe. The Yetzer Hara, the Satan, begrudges this tzaddik. Now the Yetzer Hara, the Satan, the Malchamavet, gets these extra years of life. What does he do with it? He gives it to him as a gift. He's not going to live 70 years, he's going to live 80 years now instead of 70. That means that at the age of 36, he has not yet lived half of his life in the majority. So he still can be attacked by the Yetzer Hara, by the Satan, he can still win out of him. So if you follow that point, it really shows that this is not because he likes him that he gives him these extra years. He gives it to him to trap him, to hold him still within his power for those few more years that he might be able to get at him. To go a step further, the Gemara says that there's a machloket between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim. The case of Cheskiyahu, King Chizkiyahu became ill, and he was told he was going to die. He was told that by Yeshayahu, the prophet. He prayed to Hashem, and his prayer was accepted, and Hashem said to Chizkiyahu Melech, I'm going to add 15 more years to your life. The question is, what are those 15 years? Where do they come from? The Chachamim say these 15 years were 15 years more than Chizkiyahu HaMelech was fated to live in the first place. Whatever he's supposed to live, Hashem was giving him now 15 additional years to live, more than he was scheduled to live. Which means that a person could be fated to live a certain number of years, he could receive more years to his life. Rabbi Akiva says no. Whatever he person was fated to live, that's it. So when Hashem said, I'll give you 15 years more, this meant that he was supposed to have died now 15 years before his time. Hashem said, I'm giving you back those 15 years that you would have died earlier. Now, according to Rabbi Akiva, we have a question here. How can we say that the Melech HaMevet gives these years as a bonus, in addition to a tzaddik? Rabbi Akiva says that a tzaddik cannot live more than the years that are fated for him. The answer is, Tosafot asks this question and answers, that it is true that a tzaddik cannot get years added to his life on his own. But if, because there are no such thing as having new years created for a person, but if there are years somewhere belonging to someone else who has lost them, that even Rabbi Akiva would admit could be given to a tzaddik. With this too we can understand the question that is asked about Moshe Rabbeinu. When the Torah says that Moshe Rabbeinu said, because of the fact that he had struck the rock instead of speaking to it, therefore he will not be able to enter into Eretz Yisrael. Now, how can we attribute his not entering to the fact that he struck the rock? Moshe Rabbeinu himself said, today I am on my 120th birthday. This was the end of his life. So even if he had not struck the rock, how could he enter Eretz Yisrael if he's destined to die, to pass away that day? There were no more years left to him. So what is the difference whether he struck the rock or not? Was the end of his time. But here we can understand now that it is possible, even according to Rabbi Akiva, for a tzaddik, even when his time is up, to receive additional years from an outside source, years that belong to someone else, years that are lost to that person, can be transferred to a tzaddik. And that's why even in the case of Moshe Rabbeinu, even though he said, my time is up now, if not for the fact that he was stopped from entering Eretz Yisrael, the question only of living more would have been no problem. Could have been given years that were free, waiting for a tzaddik to be granted that bonus. These great tzaddikim, who in their passing become even still greater, are those who guard us during their lifetime against the Yetzer Hara, against all evil, and their zechut will be zocheh to the Geulah Shleimah.